And so you may not be able to hear us. And the
there we go. We can hear ourselves now.
I can't.
You can't. Are you plugged in? Turn your volume is turned all the way down. Okay. There was a switch that was different
there
here.
Okay.
But the cutting edge CD player from I think this is some of the most modern technology in the building. This is probably 2002 era. What would you
say? At least we still don't have the one that we used to have where you had to stick your finger inside the machine
and get a little electric shock every time you pushed play. That I miss that. I miss that. It was stimulative. It made me be very awake every time we started our program.
I think we're maybe the only people that use a CD player.
So, once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else fill up the wall with our English dead.
All right.
Try playing some music and see if it'll work.
I'm going to move it forward to the correct station, and we'll go from there. There it is.
There it is. There it is. We had an engineer in here to fix things, although I don't think he's technically an engineer. He's actually a very bored operator. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and...
Jake.
Mac, you're just...
I'm just turning this down. Yes, but we're still playing music, so...
Well, we can talk over the music.
Sure. Okay, Jeff and Jake McClure. There we go. We said it.
So this is Saturday. It is the 7th of July, and it is atypical. Well, I mean, you know, 7-7-2018.
Yeah.
We'll remember that forever as being an atypical day. And this atypical day, we are supposed to tell you that the Personal Wealth Coach is not only a radio program that has started off awkwardly today.
Of course it has.
It is.
When does it start unawkwardly?
We sometimes get it pretty right. We get the bagpipes to play. We fill up the wall with our English dead. And
sometimes being pretty rare.
Yeah.
And
the problem is we don't have any English dead, which is why we have so much trouble filling up the wall. We need some English dead.
We need to get some English. Do you think they export their dead? I mean, with the Brexit, they may require.
I don't know. They may start to export their dead at some point. Mostly, I think they'd either bury them or burn them.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Which probably leads to questions about recycling, but we won't go into that. It's a landfill area.
Reuse. I mean, we're not reusing. This is something I've talked about for a long time. We could solve starvation, and no, it's just horrible.
No, Solvent Green is not a good solution.
It's people!
And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, that's perfectly right. We don't either.
That's right.
The Personal Wealth Coach, and we are the name Personal Wealth Coach applies to both a registered investment advisory firm that does wealth management in Salado, Texas, and this radio program. And that's not coincidental. They have the same two bald-headed, often nonsensical guys. And the information we present on here should not be considered to be investment advice, even though we as a firm are a registered investment advisory firm. Why? Because investment advice is given to individuals and not in general terms, because it doesn't work that way. It should be considered to be educational. The information that we present on this program has come from sources we believe to be reliable, and we've checked it to the best of our ability, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the accuracy or completeness of such information.
Boy, oh boy.
What else are we going to say? Close cover before striking doesn't work anymore because nobody does that.
I'm going to alleviate the boredom of our disclosures for a moment with another joke based on the English dead concept we were going on.
Oh, one other thing. Town Square Media, disavow all knowledge of Town Square Media.
Yes. Well, our opinions are not their opinions, and our facts may or may not be their facts.
And vice versa. They may have alternative facts.
Right. Okay, so two cannibals are eating a clown.
Oh, boy.
One says to the other, "Does this taste funny to you?"
What's the punchline?
Clowns are supposed to be funny, I guess.
Okay. Well, we should probably... What? Were you raising your hand to say something?
No. I was raising my hand to move a microphone. But
well, we should probably talk about what happened in the market since we can't figure out anything else to start with.
Yeah.
The markets were up just a little bit this week, and I had there it is. Okay, here we go. The S&P 500 stock index, which is the index we prefer to follow, particularly lately since the Dow has swapped around some members, and it is behaving what we consider to be a little bit oddly. The S&P 500.
Wait, we gotta explain that in a second. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has 30 stocks in it, 30 companies in it.
Mm-hmm. And mostly they're not industrial.
Right. They're no longer industrial. It should be the Dow Jones Information Average now, but it's not. Most people just call it the Dow anyway. They're big companies.
It should be called the Dow Jones Tech Average.
Because
Microsoft is in there and they don't make anything.
Right. Well,
except software.
They make imaginary stuff you can see. Imaginary stuff you can see.
But you can't actually see it because it's downloaded now. You don't even go buy a box with a disc in it. So anyway, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is only 30 stocks, and they pulled GE out, and GE promptly went up, and they put in Walgreen Boots to replace GE, and it promptly lowered to a value below that of GE, and they had removed GE because it lowered to such a low value on the market.
Right.
And lately, the behavior has... I mean, over the long term, I think the Dow Jones Industrial Average probably will be very close to the S&P 500 if the editors continue to do the job right. But
it's not editors of the Wall Street Journal anymore.
That's right. That's right.
They're owned by S&P.
Yeah, and S&P is owned by somebody else now.
Another news organization, yeah.
Bloomberg or somebody. I don't even remember who owns it all now. But at any rate, it used to be the editors of the Wall Street Journal who decided who went in, what went in and out. But when a stock falls after being removed from a popular index, that's generally an indication that people don't trust that index very much anymore.
It's owned by S&P Dow Jones.
I mean, when it rises.
Indices.
Oh, well, S&P Dow Jones Indices decided to remove General Electric and substitute Walgreen Boots. And the next day, Amazon announced that it was buying Pill Grabber. And that all of a sudden, Walgreens Boots' very profitable job of marking up prescription drugs and selling them to the public looked somewhat threatened, and the price fell.
Yes.
Anyway. Well, anyway, the S&P 500 stock index, which is the one we prefer when we're talking about the stock market, for the week was up 1.52%. Now, that's quite impressive, really. If you multiply that times 52, you get a heck of a rise in the market. Of course, it's not a good idea.
It's probably not a good idea to
do,
though. No.
So it closed out at 27.59.82. And I don't know how many of you remember these things, but a while back, we had 27.72, and I thought that's the easy one to remember, 27.72, that we closed out the week, and it's below that. So I put what I'm following the market, and if you're interested in figuring out where the market is, rather than Dow's up 2 points today or down 500 points or whatever, find a number and remember it and kind of make a little mark in your mind. I remember 2,500, I did that, And 27.72 was an easy one to remember.
Let's make sure that they know that that's an analogy, the mark of the mind. Please don't drill anything. No trip-anning to get to marking minds.
It's perfectly all right with me if they want to do that. Anyway,
it's not okay with me. Please consult with a physician or a competent tax advisor at the very least.
There's a very significant thing that's going on in the market indices this year that a lot of people aren't paying much attention to, because the economy is going like gangbusters. And we had a job, we'll talk about that later, we had a jobs report where we hired more people than were expected and unemployment went up.
Yes.
Which is fairly easily explainable. We've done a lot of research on that. We won't talk about that.
There's a lot of ways of looking at that. Yeah.
And it's a positive thing. It also, by the way, is a strong indicator that we're at the tail end of this growth period, mm-hmm. in our recovery from the 2009 recession, because the last job entrants are entering, and now we know where they're coming from. Anyway. I said that the S&P 500 is up roughly 1.5% for the week. It's only up 3.22% for the entire 6 months plus of the year. So we're a week into the seventh month of the year, and the S&P 500 is up 3.22%. Basically, when we look at where it was a week ago at the beginning of July, it was up about 1.5%, 1.7%. That means if the second half of the year, the market does as well as it did in the first half of the year, the stock market will be up a whopping roughly 3.5% for the year, which is going to be a little disappointing to people. Now, the 12-month return really looks good because we were in a slump 12 months ago. So we're up 13.8% in the S&P 500 from a year ago. But that's going to go away as time goes by if we don't get some major move upward in the market. And here's the interesting thing. Every forecaster, reader of GDP tea leaves that I know of says that we're going to have a quarterly, when the second quarter GDP is released by the Commerce Department, their first estimate is going to be somewhere between the upper threes and as high, some are saying is 5%. The median is around 4%. So we'll get an average, we'll get an annualized. Remember, this is annualized, which means for the quarter, a 4% return, a 4% GDP will be 1% for the quarter. But still, if the economy is booming along at a 4% annualized rate and the market is up so little that it can move more in a day than it's moved all year, you got to ask yourself what happened. Where is the reason for the market not to reflect the dramatic increase in earnings? And by the way, again, these are just estimates at this point. We don't have the fresh numbers in. But the estimates are that we're going to see corporate earnings growth something like 20% year over year. 20%. And it'll be most of that will have occurred this year, but the market didn't go up.
Let me show you one piece here. So we've got the trade deficit data that came out, actually came out yesterday for May. So trade data is a month delayed behind a lot of our other stuff. Usually at this point, we're getting some of June's data and a lot of the other, like Labor Department stuff, it's a week delayed. With trade stuff, it takes longer. So the trade deficit this in May was at $43.1 billion. That means that we exported less than we imported by $43 billion in May. Okay, the expected consensus was 43.6. So we're talking very, very accurate predictions by economists. The economists in general predicted a 43.6%. We got a 43.6 billion dollar deficit. It came in at 43.1. Exports rose by $4 billion. So that's a significant thing on a month-to-month basis. The exports were led by soybeans and civilian aircraft.
So were the civilian aircraft carrying the soybeans?
No, not in this case. So, but what's clear here is that the Europeans have threatened to put tariffs on automobiles and aircraft in retaliation. And the Chinese are putting tariffs on soybeans. So are the Europeans, by the way. The Europeans also think soybeans are a good target.
And we mentioned this in the newsletter, but it's important to recognize this surge in exports that we've seen, which caused the trade deficit to drop, is because there is a big rush, was a big rush in May.
Yeah, to get that stuff out there.
To get the soybeans out before the tariffs went into effect. Matter of fact, I was reading this morning, the Chinese media, the social media in China, was the big buzz.
Wait a minute. You were reading the Chinese media this
morning? I was reading I was reading from Financial Times of London about the Chinese social media that was a very hot topic, and it was actually carried in regular media about this U.S. ship that was racing to get across the Pacific and into port
Before
the 25% tariff on soybeans hit, and it didn't quite make it and is now moving very slowly, and apparently it's causing great rejoicing in China. Although,
yeah, they're rejoicing because they see it as a failure of they're calling us a bully. So we should have been rooting them on because the companies that were doing this export didn't participate in any of the tariffs. It just suddenly it's there. These people are going to have to cough up some money now.
The Chinese are also a little bit concerned about the fact that they eat a lot of soy-based products, and their soy-based products are now going to go up in price about 25% across China. But they're far less concerned about that than they are about, quote, beating the United States. As a matter of fact, the trade war, the big news for this week economically, we were talking about the stock market just now, but and there's other things out there. But the big news this week is the trade war is no longer a threat. We now have a full-fledged trade war going with tit-for-tat, we imposed $25 billion worth of trade tariffs on China, and they turn around.
Would
and,
you like a list of the imposed tariffs?
And they turned around and responded with $25 billion. So
okay. Let me give you just real quick so that people, a lot of people are saying, has that started yet? Well, yes, it's started. Here's the deal. Washing machines. U.S. imposed tariffs on washing machines in March, a 20% to 50%, depending on which country it's coming from, in March. And that was...
That was because of the strategic danger to the United States of not making enough washing machines.
And I just lost my internet connection.
Oh.
Do you have one?
I don't know. I'm looking at the international trade in goods and services. But what... The issue was that, and this is the thing, people have asked me if I object to the tariffs or I don't object to the tariffs. I'm not in a position to really object or not object.
Yeah. We can look at the...
I can say they happened.
We can look at historical ramifications.
But I can also, and I can say that, generally speaking, those who say nobody wins a trade war are right. I can also say that this is a war. It may not be involved shooting at this point, but it in the past has led to shooting wars. But it reminds me a lot of an economic war that is very similar to the way it started as the war in Iraq. There was a general consensus, and there was public statements by the administration at the time.
And a lot of popularity
That we were going to win the war in Iraq very quickly, and we were just going to sweep through, and we declared victory. Unfortunately, we're still there, and the war is still going on, and our victory doesn't seem to be particularly complete. Well, you can destroy things a lot easier than you can build them. Now, that's strategically looking at the long term. Now, whether it's a good idea to call China's bluff and to say you're stealing intellectual property from us and you're doing bad things, let me finish this out right here. I want to say something here. My objection, and this is Jeff McClure, objecting, is that the law under which the president is imposing these tariffs is a strategic protection of the ability of the United States to go to war, to defend itself in time of war. And for the life of me, I cannot imagine why putting a tariff on importing washing machines has a strategic impact on the United States.
Right.
Congress should be putting the Constitution says Congress puts tariffs in place, not the president. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, we've got a caller waiting on 773-1400. I'm going to say washing machines came first. That was China, South Korea, and Mexico. Then we had solar panels. That was the same day, mostly in China. That's a 30% tariff on solar panels. 22% tariff on Canadian newsprint. That's just paper, but it's a certain quality of paper that is...
But it raises the price of newsprint in the United States dramatically, which means it's more expensive to publish a newspaper.
Right, unless you're doing it online. And then it's really hard to put a tariff on electronic stuff. Then we've got a 25% tariff on most countries. By most countries, I think it's all but two at this point for steel. That's been imposed. The aluminum, 10%. Most countries, again, all but two. Now the European Union has imposed one on bourbon, orange juice, jeans, and other products, Harley Davidson being included in that, of 25%. Mexico has put $3 billion of U.S. goods, including steel and pork, 20 to 25% on that. Canada's got $12.8 billion of goods, including maple syrup and whiskey, that they've got a 10 to 25% on. India is putting in, and this takes effect next month, so that's not in place yet, but the U.S.-China one that just hit is 25% on about $50 billion. This is $34 billion, but another $16 coming in the near term. The second set will be under further review. So that was U.S. to China. China responded with $34 billion, so they haven't gone up to say we're going to do the 50 thing yet. But now that there is an additional, they said they're going to do $34 billion, which is tit for tat. This is, I did it, you do it back.
Said you're going to. They actually have done it now.
Right, they've done it. Now the Trump administration says they're going to put an additional $200 billion tariff on there. That's been threatened. It's not been said deadlines.
There's a $16 billion coming in August.
Yeah, that's got a deadline. That's actually going to happen. It's being reviewed. But it's going to happen. Then European Union's, we have a threatened 20% import tariff on their automobiles. So we do have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, guys, enjoy the show. There's an article in the Wall Street that says no one knows how much tariffs will hurt. I guess there's, you know, umpteen models out there. What do the McClure dynasty think about the tariffs and how much they're going to hurt the economy? I'll hang up and listen.
Awesome. Thank you.
Are we related to the Duck Dynasty?
We may be. We quack a lot.
We have beards.
We walk like a duck. We quack like a duck. We have beards like ducks.
What do we think the tariffs are going to do?
Okay. Let me throw this in there, and then I'll hand it back to you if you don't mind.
Okay.
Because this is something...
My mother said I very rarely mind it.
Right. There's one side of this that is viscerally exciting to me. Because all those models that you just talked about, all the economic models on tariffs, are not from this era for the United States.
Right.
They're all from long ago, like the 1930s.
A long, long time ago.
When trade was very different. So before the hills got dusty. The 1930s is the last time we had big tariffs.
And we had a recession.
And we had a... Well,
we had a depression.
It's a bit more than a recession.
Yeah, we had a depression.
People said it was quite great.
Right.
I didn't think it was all that great when studying it. It seemed pretty horrible, but I guess, you know, people have a different meaning of great sometimes. Okay, so the reason why I'm viscerally excited is because there has been no period for economists to update their math, to update the models, because a very simple demonstration of that is you have a 25% import tariff on steel. How much does that raise the price of steel?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's some variables you have to throw in there. How much steel are we importing versus how much are we creating ourselves? So there's a variable. And at this point, we create about 77% of our imports, of our own steel. We bring in 23%. Okay. So a 25% steel tariff on a 23% import creates a 50% rise in price.
And nobody knows why, really. There's some guesses, but they're just educated guesses.
But there are going to be Nobel Prizes won on this. Because if somebody gets a model that makes a good, accurate assumption in it that says this is the range you should expect, then the model is going to be successful. So what is it that we see? We're still updating the models, but any way you look at it, it means prices are going to go up more than the tariff. It's not going to be a 25% increase in prices of steel.
Now, Wilbur Ross said he knew the reason that the price went up 50%.
What's that? Oh, yes, I know what it is.
The evil speculators.
Aggressive. He called it aggressive speculation, not evil speculation.
Yes, that people are somehow stockpiling great quantities of steel somewhere.
But
we don't know where it is. But
This is a warning thing to throw out there. Anytime prices of a given commodity are being blamed on speculation, you should all beware. Because speculation is just another form of demand. Doesn't matter if you're an aggressive speculator or if you intend to use the steel. If you buy the steel or the contract and you don't sell it in time, you get the steel. It's going to show up in your lap.
The crazy thing is...
that you don't want tons of steel in your lap, just as a side note. Especially not hot rolled.
Maybe Mr. Ross knows, or Secretary Ross knows something that I don't know and the rest of the country doesn't know, but there was a great deal of effort put into trying to figure out who is doing the speculation and where they're storing all this massive quantity of steel that they would have to buy at ridiculously high prices to run the price up. And so far, nobody has found great quantities of steel being stored. As a matter of fact, the crucial issue, and here's what we're running into, there's a shortage of steel in the United States.
Yeah.
So, and that's when you have a shortage of something, the price goes up. Speculators accumulate quantities of something, and it's really obvious when they're doing it, particularly when it's steel. I mean, it's not like you can put it in your back pocket and hide it.
Yeah. So let me give an example, because you just gave this, and it's an easy one. You just mentioned it. The soybeans going to China.
Well, it's soybeans in American. It's soya beans, if you speak English.
Okay. So there's, I'm going to call it soybeans, just like I say Germany rather than Deutschland.
Oh, okay.
I do. I mean, it's just the way we speak here.
Just be that way if you want.
Okay, so there's this big ship full of containers, and each of the containers are full of soy. The soy is heading to China. There is a price on the soybeans that has been agreed to in advance. That's the only reason why you take the effort to ship it. Because if you think about when you buy from Amazon or almost anywhere else, you've got to have a buyer before it ships. Generally, the payment has been agreed upon. So it's shipped. It's on the way. It costs money to ship it. Okay, in this case, it costs a lot of money to ship it. If you're in the business of selling soybeans and you just lost a lot of money on a shipment that didn't get there in time, your next move is to stop selling soybeans in China, which causes the price of soybeans in China to go way up. Now let's flip it around here. Steel. The same thing happened with shipments of steel. They didn't quite reach us before the tariffs hit. The people that were selling the steel lost a lot of money. You know, you've got to say that with lots of underlines. Sometimes, and this is where it gets finicky, the company that was selling the steel, that was shipping the steel to the United States, that lost a lot of money, was an American company. So hold on to that for a moment. Because Americans have pieces of their company all over the world. And if they're shipping steel from Mexico to the United States, and it's between an American company and an American company, when it crosses the border, a tariff still gets charged. It's not just stuff that you intend to sell immediately or that's been purchased by someone else. It's also stuff that you already own. So let's just give yourself a moment and say, I own a kilo of steel. That's not very much, but it's a kilo of steel, and I've got it stored in Mexico, and I'm bringing it home. Well, it's going to cost you money to bring it home. That's an extreme example. So the price of the steel staying in Mexico rather than here is better.
We actually fell.
Yeah, it fell. Now there's less market available to buy it. Because if you bring it to the United States, you got to pay more for it. So when you're in the United States, this is the convoluted necessary understanding of trade, is that it's intermingled.
The caller asked a very good question. What do we think the long-term effects will be? If we continue the escalation of the trade war with the bidding continuing to rise, let's just say that by sometime in October, President Trump's $200 billion, which he... Again, as I said earlier, he's using a law that was never designed for this. The Constitution gives tariff imposition to the Congress. They gave it to the president and said, and basically he is using a law that was designed for strategic use, not strategic defense use. It says that, but it doesn't restrict what he does. There's no oversight on it. Anyway, if he continues this, and if the Chinese and the Europeans continue with their matching the tariffs one-on-one, and the Canadians continue to match the tariffs one-on-one, which, by the way, I think if he continues, they will do it. It's a matter of national pride now, and I don't think anybody's going to back down until the person who started it back down. And based on the character of Donald Trump, our president, I don't see him backing down until he feels like he's won or he's bankrupt.
But that's also what we would say exactly the same thing about Xi Jinping. He's not going to back down.
Right, but he didn't start it. He's responding.
Right.
Who starts it has got to stop before the people who are reacting to it. They're only reacting
correct
to it. Now, so what will happen if that happens? I don't think economists have fully got their minds around at this point the fact that these are real. I told you we went to a month ago, we were at a conference where the economists were unanimous that this was just bluffing. There wasn't really going to be a trade war.
They weren't going to impose it. And I raised my hand at one point and said, there are already tariffs imposed.
The point is that the ramifications of an all-out trade war are so horrific historically that it's very, very difficult for economists to believe that anybody in there who studied any history at all could possibly impose them. And very frankly,
there hasn't been a lot of
the president has the president has bragged about the fact he doesn't read books and he doesn't study history. So he probably is unaware of this. So
no.
What do I think may happen if we continue on this track? We're going to have a recession. The possibility exists of somewhere there being a shooting war over this.
Let's kind of come back as to why. Historically, what's caused this to lead to a recession? And I'm going to give some principles of the vast majority of recessions in the past. Recessions in the past, for the majority of time that we have measurement, happen because there's an overabundance of manufactured goods sitting in warehouses or an underabundance of manufactured goods available to purchase. So when you talk about trade wars, that's exactly what we're talking about here. There's either not enough steel to make the thing or too much steel to make the thing. And when I say too much steel, we're talking about bigger than just the United States as a recession. There's now too much steel in Canada and too much steel in China and too much steel in Mexico, which means that the people that make steel are going to go out of business there just like they're going out of business here.
You know, there's a fact here that's pretty solid, and it's kind of like it's what sometimes referred to as the elephant in the room, but I don't think people are paying any attention to the elephant in the room in this case.
What elephant?
The elephant is that the United States is a consumer-based economy. That's why we do so much importing.
Yeah. We're service
and
consumers.
We basically fund our economy. We make stuff in the United States. We import things to the United States, and we sell them internally, and that's what drives our economy. There are other economies in the world that are not as healthy or as mature or as robust, and there's a lot of them, that live or die on exports.
Right. So China and Germany are both two of those.
Right. And what's happened historically is when a company, Japan, prior to World War II, lived and died on exports. And as a result, when we chopped off their ability to export to the United States, they considered that to be an act of war, built up their military. Now, this was not something that happened in 5 minutes. This was beginning in the 1930s, and it wasn't until 1941 that they did something about it. But
they talked about it a lot before they did it. We just ignored them.
The point is, if you want to cause somebody to get that is not particular, that is right on the edge of financial or food collapse, and you take away from them what we consider to be a small amount, they then consider themselves threatened and turn to dictators and turn to a war footing to claim what they believe is theirs and they have the right to take. Now, does that mean it's absolutely going to happen? I don't know, but I know that's what's happened historically.
Let me throw something in right there because it's the perfect point. The reason why the president has the ability to input tariffs right now, the reason why he's got the power to do this is because Congress in the 60s was looking at history, which is, hold on to your hats for a moment, what Congress was looking at history, and they recognized that it takes Congress a long time to do stuff. And if we're being attacked with tariffs, or we have a strategic threat and that we're not going to be able to create something that is strategically vital to our defense, the president needs to be able to step in and say, as a response to other people or as a response to our own threat, here's a tariff. That's now being applied to washing machines and solar panels.
And soybeans.
That is not a strategic threat. So what's happening is it's not a strategic threat to us. but it becomes a strategic threat to someone else. This is how things get bigger. Now, we have to emphasize something very, very clearly. You have not heard us give an opinion on this. What you're hearing is us talking about what's happened historically. If you look at what's happened historically, we can just extrapolate going forward. Do we think it was a good idea to do this? Probably not. We're going to be able to measure this, and we may wind up with some bad consequences from it. Now is probably the best possible time to do this experiment, though. You've probably heard us say that, too, in that our economy is doing very, very well. It may cause the rest of the world to go into recession. Usually we lead the world into recession and then lead the world out of recession. We may be leading the rest of the world into recession without us being there first and then joining it. And that's the danger of this, is that we lose the momentum of the leadership position in the economy.
And there's an aspect to this that is very real. And that is the Chinese yuan, their currency, has been falling since the tariffs were announced by the Trump administration, because it is going to hurt, the Chinese economy.
And the dollar's been rising.
And the dollar's been rising, and that makes Chinese goods less expensive in the United States. As a matter of fact, it won't take a great deal of movement of the dollar up and the yuan down
to completely negate the tariff.
It will negate the tariff, but it will also produce a very interesting world effect, and that is Chinese goods will be less expensive all over the world.
And American goods will be more expensive all over the world.
And that means our exports will ultimately fall. We've already set up a situation where we're going to have record trade deficits simply because we have to import so much money in the United States to meet the demands of the tax cut bill that passed. Everything is pointing right now to exacerbation of a recession we were probably going to get anyway because of the tax cut. We basically have goosed the economy. We are imposing tariffs which have a counter effect on the economy, but they're going to hit at a different time. A recession in 2020 sure is looking like it's going to happen in a big piece, and all of these elements are pieces of it.
What generally happens before a recession is you get the leading indicators going downward. We're not seeing that yet, although some of them have started down. The majority of them are still in an upward move. One of the leading indicators is the stock market. So be aware, we're looking ahead and saying recession 2020, one of the leaders of the recession is going to be a downward movement in the stock market. That means to keep reserves handy. Don't try to time it. This is something that is educational in the extreme. If you hear someone say there's going to be a bear market, and there's articles out there at this point that are saying that, there's articles out there that says the bull's going to last forever, which is dangerous in itself. If you read that and it causes you to get out of the market 100%, then you have to decide when you're going to get back in. Timing the market about this stuff is very rarely effective. In the fact that the vast majority of people that do it lose money in the process. So you have to make a decision at some point to say, I'm sticking in here, but I need to make sure that my reserves are good, particularly if you're taking money out of the market. If you're taking money out of the market in retirement or any other method for that matter, you're taking money out. You should have, we call it dry powder. You should have reserves in place so that when the market drops, like, you hear us say when the market drops, not if, because anybody that looks at the market knows it drops. You just have reserves in your portfolio so that you're not having to sell out of the market when it's down. Expect the market to drop. It's not because of tariffs or anything else. This is the particular input this time around. Markets drop. So keep that in mind. And we've got to play some commercials. Did you have anything else to say before we hit the commercials?
No, well, I've got a lot more to say, but let's do the commercials.
All right. I'm going to hit the start button. If you'd like to join our conversation, we've got a couple of lines in here now instead of just one. How's that for fangled, nice and fancy? The phone number in here is 254-773-1400.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we actually have the bagpipes playing now. There's, you know, there's no telling what we're liable to work out here. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, of course, and you can give us a call at 254-773-1400. And we've got about 15 minutes left in this hour and about an hour left in the next hour, so you're certainly welcome to give us a call. And we were talking about a lot of things. We were talking about what's likely to come and the fact that the market is up so very little this year. It's up very little this year. It's also, if you go back and look and see when the market peaked at the end of January, relating to the question that the caller had about what do we think the tariffs are going to do, you'll notice that we are down from the end of January in the stock market, despite the fact that current earnings are on the way up. There's a bottom line here, and that is that both the earnings, corporate earnings in the United States, and the gross domestic product are lagging indicators. They're from last quarter, and last quarter's earnings are from activities that occurred in the 6 months to a year before that. So these are lagging indicators, and we're going to get some big numbers in. And you're probably going to hear some crowing from Washington about it. But we're going to get some big GDP numbers in. We're going to get some big earnings numbers in. It's going to really look good. But don't expect the market to take off and break records. Now, the possibility exists later in the year. It could start up again. But factually, the trade wars are starting to have an effect. Companies are already reporting that what they call their supply chain, which is a just-in-time supply chain. You build a car, it's got lots of parts in it, it's got lots of people who are building it, got lots of companies building it.
You need the part, right, not waiting. Go ahead.
It starts with iron ore and silicon and oil that's going to be made into the rubber-like material in the vehicle, and it works all the way through a supply chain. And these cross borders many, many times. That's already starting to show some slowdown, which means our ability to build things is starting to slow down. The industrial companies didn't go up this week. They went down as a group. The tech companies went up. The industrial companies went down. And so we've got this issue going on. I'd like to get into the jobs thing.
Yeah, I've got that open right now. You were talking about on-time ordering. The jobs market is this has nothing to do with trade. You know, people hear us talking about trade. That's just because it's a popular discussion right now. But the jobs market, we're hitting some bottlenecks there. You want to jump in?
A couple of things happened. And the biggest one that happened with this report on the jobs market is the 601,000 people who entered the job market in the last month, which was a heck of a lot higher than normally. About 100 and some thousand normally would enter the job market on average in any given month. Now, it's bumped up a little bit by the fact that we've got graduation that went on this in that time frame. But normally we see that hit in July. But it looks like it's hitting in May and June. It's just hitting a little early. But it's not so much the graduates, the 600,000 people that entered the job market. It's mostly people with a high school education or less, and many of them are minority groups, particularly African-American males, that have entered the job market, that were out of the job market for some time because they'd given up on trying to find a job. So they've gone back into the job market, and over 200,000 of them got hired right away. Now, previously, companies had been reluctant to hire the very same people because they're not well-educated, they're not well-trained. In many cases, they have smudges on their record. In some cases, they are recovering from opioid issues. People who previously were not very eligible for work.
You mentioned there was a big upturn in employment in African-American men.
Right.
There's also an upturn in employment in middle-aged white men, which are both, those are the two target categories for opioid problems, by the way, just as a side note. Middle-aged white men and younger African-American men tend to be the ones with the biggest opioid stuff on their record. There's an extra scary thing in there that's mentioned in our newsletter about the felony arrests in the past.
We've you know, remember, if you remember Rudolph Giuliani and the broken windows philosophy of lowering crime rates, which, by the way, has largely been disproven as an effective way to lower crime rates.
It did lower – something lowered crime rate at that point, and that was what was given credit.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily what the right credit was.
But the point is that we decided in the United States to arrest a lot of people and put a lot of people in prison about that time. And the end result was we wound up with the highest incarceration rate of any country on the planet, period, including third world dictatorships. Not a particularly good idea in retrospect. But the problem, of course, is that once a person has a conviction and they've been in prison, reentering the workforce becomes not quite impossible, but if there's people to be hired and you have one person who's been in prison for a felony on assault, for example, or for drug usage or something, and you have another person who hasn't, well, obviously you've hired the person who hasn't. Well, we've run out of those people in the United States. That's why we say we had full employment. What is very pleasantly going on right now, and I hope it persists, is that a lot of people who previously were not acceptable for employment.
Non-violent people, non-violent crime offenders are now being hired. We've finally gotten to that point where people that have one mess up in their record are getting hired again.
So that gives people an opportunity to come into the workforce and prove themselves. And you obviously, if they get in trouble again, and that's two strikes in this particular case, they're out. But that is where this second wave of people are coming from. Earlier, we had another wave of people entering the workforce after the hurricane that wiped out Puerto Rico. We basically had a lot of people coming in from Puerto Rico who entered the workforce that bumped the unemployment rate up temporarily, but we absorbed all of them and kept on going. Everything that we see out there indicates that there are fewer and fewer and fewer unemployed people. The workforce participation rate is starting to go up.
We're
basically scraping the bottom of the barrel at this point for employees.
There's two ways of looking at the unemployed numbers. On the bigger numbers, the unemployed can be done through this telephone survey where they say who's looking for jobs but doesn't have them. And then there's another way of looking at it that we don't see as a percentage number very often, and it's the same one that does the initial claims and says how many people have claimed unemployment and so on. And that's the insured unemployment. These are people that had a job before and no longer have a job through a layoff. We've got about 1.6 million people in the United States. That is extremely low.
We've only got 1.6 million people in the United States
that are on insured unemployment. That means the people that are being paid by some kind of government insurance program, the premiums are paid by the businesses. So either federal or state unemployment being paid to people who have lost their jobs, that's 1.6 million people, which is extremely low. Last year at this point, it was about 1.8. So 200,000 people have pulled out of that since then. And that's a pretty steady gap for the whole year, about 200,000 less. When summer comes around, we see a big spike in that. A big spike in it is that it isn't the kids getting out of school and saying, hey, I need to get a job, because they didn't have a job before. So they couldn't claim the insurance. But it's for the same reason. There's a lot of people that have a job through the school year working at schools. And then during the summer, they don't have that job. And it's a technical layoff that happens every year at the same time. So we can see that spike happen usually it happens in late June through July. There's another big spike that generally happens at the end of December, beginning of January. And that's because people say, I'm going to keep you through the end of the year. Or people say, I'm going to stay at this job through the end of the year. So when people talk about seasonally adjusted numbers, that they're not talking about putting garlic salt on the numbers, although I like that seasoning better. Seasonally adjusted means that we know there's two major points in the year where this stuff goes off the charts and it makes the normalized numbers look funny. So we're in that spot. Less people are hitting at this point than are expected to as far as the seasonally adjusted numbers. So I expect this stuff to be adjusted again. They may update the model on it.
Well, the good news is if you look at the percentage of African-Americans in the population who are employed, last couple of years it's been going up very nicely.
Right.
Labor participation rate from that group of people is obviously, because those are statistics we can pretty well depend on. And by the way, this happens. It happened in 1999 and 2000. It happened in 2007, although not as strongly as we're seeing it right now. So we're seeing what traditionally has been the top of the market for labor. Now, what we're not seeing, which is there's a lot of discussion as to why we've not been seeing it and when it's going to show up. The wages per hour for hourly workers has risen 2.7% in the last 12 months,
right.
And that's not a lot.
Mix that with a 2.1% increase in hours worked, and you get a slightly larger wage increase mm-hmm. than it looks. It's still pretty small, though.
So we normally would see more inflation at this point. That's a bit of a conundrum for the Federal Reserve.
So let me give you the total numbers.
When I say inflation, we'd see wage inflation rising.
Right. Earnings are up about 4.9% for workers. That's mm-hmm. because of earnings per hour going up and number of hours worked going up. So expect some more of that, but it's not a whole lot. One of the things that we've been saying is that this is the point where that should be happening, and expect that to accelerate now based on trade wars and so on.
We're getting close to out of time for the first hour. Do have some more things to talk about. One of them I want to talk about when we come back, if you allow me to, is the threat to our beloved S&P 500.
There's a threat?
There is a threat, and there's a real good reason for that, and for people who are using index funds, S&P 500 index funds, which is, by the way, a record number and a record volume of money invested in S&P 500 index funds. The tariffs basically have a threat there, and we probably will see what's called a market turnover. But you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we are also an investment advisory firm that does wealth management for relatively well-off people and manages portfolios. We're located in Salado, Texas. And if you'd like to reach us, we have voicemail on the weekends and live people answering the phone during the week at 254-947-1111, or
you can reach that same voicemail during the weekend, real live people during the week, toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can email us directly, jeff at tpwc.com or jake at tpwc.com. On our website, we have recordings of this program going back several years, more than several years, and we have newsletters and so on. If you'd like to contact us, there's a way to do it there too. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.